Okay, Rita, you're involved with St. Michael's Resource Centre here in St. Michael's Estate in Chicourt. Can you just tell us briefly what this centre does and how long it's been here?
It is a community development organisation, and it was set up by the people back in 1986 because there was a lot of glue sniffing and there was a lot of poverty things on this estate that needed to be addressed. But at that time, back in them times, those who built the flats didn't think that people needed any space. So the women got together and they got a flat off Dublin City Council, and they set up a huge project. They set up support for lone parents. They set up a creche all in the one flat. We now have four flats across the estate. There's also a huge project. And what we do on a daily basis is we work to address poverty, we work to address violence and drugs, and we're doing a huge amount of work on the conditions of the estate. So people come in here and they take part in local education, particularly the women. We have a creche that supports them coming in, and we work from their levels at what they want to learn. And that usually is a pathway forward into education and things like that. We run in after schools where we're addressing 51 children who are falling behind the classroom. We work with them on the hour so that it's a step up to keep them in the educational system. We work with the old people. Many years ago, people forgot about the old people on this day. So we run a morning every Wednesday and they come for their breakfast and they do activities. We then have a regeneration group that's addressing the issues of the regeneration of this estate. So we do all kinds of things. We make art, we protest, we do everything that's to be done around the struggle, because it is a struggle about the oppression of people in Irish society.
Okay, you say the centre here was set up in 1986. When were the flats originally built?
The flats were built in 1969, but the history of this community is long, because it was forced to Richmond Barracks, where the English where the English were based. And then when after the 1922, the Irish Army took over the land, and in the 1940s, when the army moved out, it was given to the city council, and that became a community known as Keogh Square. Back in that history, people who couldn't pay the rent in tenements came into one side of Keogh Square, and then there was another side of Keogh Square that was just ordinary people just trying to live their lives. So it had kind of a history of poverty. It had a history of being named as a slum in the city. So in 1969, when they were building Ballymun, they built these flats. There's the sisters of really Ballymun. It's the Balinchi system. It's a French system. And back in 1969 and back in the 70s, people would have died to get into St. Michael's Estate. There was heating, there was green space, there was good community. But then social policy, a policy came out where a £5,000 grant was given to people. So naturally the leaders in the community would have taken up that option, those who were working. And so that began to create gaps within the flats. And then single parents, the possibility that single parents could have housing but not houses, so they were placed within the flats. So then what happened was, what would have been normally a traditional family situation of all different kind of families began to become single parent families. So there was an imbalance. After that, they began.
What time frame were you talking about there?
I'm talking about the late 70s and early 80s. And then what happened was that it became a place where Dublin City Council placed people who were vulnerable, who they never really checked out, because what was happening was that people were getting the flats from the civic offices. So we saw the need to get some sort of a base from Dublin City Council on the estate itself, so that the tenants could work with Dublin City Council around trying to just stabilise the community, because at this stage there's a lot of vulnerable people coming into it. And then the 90s hit, and all through the 80s people would have been looking for better conditions. They would have been looking for the refurbishment as what was going on in Ballymun back in that time. And but the 90s then, the heroin epidemic of the 90s really affected the flats. So by 1998, people were just tired. You know, you couldn't step outside the door, you know, but there was somebody shooting up or somebody buying. Now, that had effects from the city, because what was happening was that the city were pushing out their drug pushers, they were pushing out their those taking the drugs, and then geographically on Dolphin's Barn and here in Inchicore, there was two chemists that were given methadone, that were the only two that were doing methadone. So naturally, people made their way here. Like, some people would be met on the stairs from Wicklow, from Bray, from Dunleary, they all made their way to this estate. And it was devastating for people. So in 1998, a survey, an official survey happened on the estate to see really what the people wanted, because it was kind of a hemorrhage happening of people leaving the estate. So we needed to know, was it refurbishment or was it redevelopment? But at that time, people voted because of what was happening, because nothing seemed to be... They weren't getting helped, you know, like, the flats weren't being policed, and if they were being policed, it was over-the-top policing. Like, at one stage, when there was a terror across the way, the police were on top of the roofs watching with binoculars as to who was coming into the estate. So if it wasn't one set of police, and it was a different set of police, and so people just felt that they needed to go, and then others who wanted to stay, wanted it redeveloped, they wanted houses with gardens. That's what they asked for. That's what 63% of the people asked for.
Okay, well, before we go on to the redevelopment plans, just in the early 1990s, just having a walk around here, you can see that quite a large percentage of the flats are boarded up or whatever. Have Dublin City Council maintained a policy of actually keeping the flats empty, or...?
Yeah, from the time that we began to make a decision on the redevelopment of the flats, nobody was placed within the flats. And I think that's different to Ballymun, because I think people in Ballymun were put into the flats, but here they began to close the flats down. But now when we look at it, we can see that it was sinister, because that's what's happening in the city. They run flat complexes down. They run them down. It's part of a policy, I believe. I may be contradicted on it, but they do run the flats down so that the maintenance really isn't done, and that people find it hard to live in it, so they want out. So then you come to something like a 14-acre site, which is very lucrative land, and that's how you can see how the developers can come in, because it's sinister.
Mm. Well, what was the effect of that policy of keeping the flats empty then? I mean, if obviously there's quite a drain on the population then, there's only fewer people left here. What's the overall effect of that?
Well, the overall effect was that when people seen the flat across from being boarded up, it uprooted them. They were feeling, I don't want to be left on this land and on my own. And you can well understand that on an 8-story block of Europe at the top land. And so that effect began to have more people go, you know. And then what was also in one of the meetings or one of the agreements was that people couldn't come back. Now, people who lived here and grew up here all their lives couldn't come back. So that's part of the policy, but it's a bigger policy.
You're saying there that, I mean, I've seen other council blocks as well. There's one down Ellis Court on Burke Street, which is an old corporation block. There's also blocks on Luke Street there and Moss Street, which are near the Ulster Bank complex, and they're all corporation blocks as well. And quite a few of those are left boarded up in derelict, even though the buildings are in quite good condition. Why do you think the council would actually pursue that policy
because
the blocks go?
Because they're identified for public-private partnerships, and public-private partnerships means that the Dublin City Council will get a number of things done, and they'll get money into their hands to deal with their own bills. So, and also that there's this whole thing that the city has to go up and up and up, and that people can't breathe in the city anymore, you know. And it's actually a dangerous policy, because when you begin to take working class communities out of the city, you begin to displace people, and you begin to displace very vulnerable people. And they did that 20 years ago. They did that from the inner city out to Ballymun, out to Talla, out to Glendalkin. And people who live in inner cities, their families come from them. So there's a big gap between where you go for your support. You know, if you're out in Talla and you don't have your bus fare to get back into town, you're really isolated, you're stuck. And if that's not your culture out there, well then, you know, that you become very depressed, or, you know, like that, you just wonder what, particularly if you live in poverty, particularly when you don't have choices. It's different when people have choices to be able to buy houses, to be able to go where they want. But when you don't have choices, and all you do, all you are, is at the hands of other people, well, your life can be totally misery. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that the council is pursuing the policy of PPPs, maybe just to turn a profit rather than actually, you know, accepting the responsibility of creating social housing? Do you think that they're more profit geared at the moment?
I think it's not only Dublin City Council. I think it's the thinking from the top down. I think this is really top down thinking. A decision was made in the Department of the Environment by Mr. Cullen in relation to public-private partnerships. And that's what's happening, I think, as well in relation to even the movement of civil servants out of the city, is that there's money to be made, there's huge profits to be made. So Dublin City Council, Dan, also see it as an opportunity for them to, yes, get somewhat out of managing housing, selling them off, selling it off. They don't really want to manage housing. They like to build, and they like to be seen as the leaders in the city. But, in the end of the day, under our constitution or in our United Nations law, the people who live on our streets, the people who can't afford, have to be guaranteed some form of housing, some form of place that they can live. That's our duty. That's our duty as a people, and that's our duty as a government. And that Dublin City Council don't have the right to sell off local authority land. They don't have that right to sell it off when we have in Dublin a 7,000 waiting list, when we have nationally a 47,000 waiting list, and they're only the people that are on the waiting list. They aren't even the people that are on other people's floors. And Dublin City Council will challenge that and say, we don't really have a 7,000. And other members of that staff that I have talked to have said, well, there are loads of private apartments being set up all around the city. Well, I don't agree that our health budget should have to go into housing. I believe that the budget for housing should come from the local authority. I believe that, that wherever and however we do, the housing is the responsibility of the councils around the country, and the health is the responsibility of health,
Coming back to the regeneration and the redevelopment of the area, the people that left the flats that are boarded up or bricked up or whatever at the moment, where did they go? What areas in the city were they rehousing?
Some people went to Drimnagh. They were lucky. Some people went to Ballyfermot, Cherry Orchard. Some people went to Clondalkin. Some have gone into the wider area here. They're the lucky ones, really, in this context now. The other, the blocks 1, 2, and 3 that are now demolished, they were rehoused over on what's the Golden Bridge site. That was the first development within the phased plan. The Sisters of Mercy made the land available for social housing, and 51 units was built, and we worked very closely with Dublin City Council on that, and the transition of them 51 sets of families or individuals over to Golden Bridge. And then we also worked with the Bulfin Court, that's another 50 units that was built on the Christian Brothers land, and 22 of the old folks from Dublin City Council, from the St. Michael's Estate, went into them. Now, they're very lucky.
Was that the pre-1998 voting on?
No, that was the first phase of the plan.
Right.
So the first phase of the plan was...
What years are we talking
about? We're talking about 98 to 2002, really.
Right.
So the decision was made in 98, and then we worked on the phases of the plan, and then the first phase was being built. And on the 10th of April in 2003... the tree towers moved to Golden Bridge, and in November 2002 the old folks moved to Bulfin. But then it leaves 7 blocks with people in them.
Okay.
So there was there was a lot of people left, but then the slowness of the next phase began to phase people out. So good leaders then were getting offered, and they went, again, leaving the kind of a people here on this estate are very vulnerable, and they don't really have many choices.
So what's the current rate of occupancy then in the towers that are left here?
There's about 58 to 60 families left in the towers at the moment. But I will tell you the process, what happened. In 1998, the people voted, 63% voted to have the flats put down. We set up a St. Michael's task force, which was at that stage chaired by Senator Brendan Ryan, and we agreed to the first plan. And then what happened was that plan went out to the people and it was consulted on, and a lot of it wasn't like. So the second, we went into a second plan, which was 2001 to 2003. And the St. Michael's Estate Task Force, which was made up of the local tenants, local organisations, voluntary and statutory, Dublin City Council, the councillors and an independent chair, and Bulfin Estate and the wider community. So that's what made up the task force. And over that 2 years, we developed a plan that was agreed by everybody. And we always say it was like signing off on the Good Friday Agreement, because we agreed 170 local authority, whether there was one person left in these flats or none, in relation to the housing list and in relation to in other flats around here where people are overcrowded and that. So that people could stay and live in the area that they were living in already. And we agreed 80 first-time buyers, which would have meant that people could have buy-in if they'd be from the area or wider.
That would be affordable housing.
And then there was 70 private, which would have been apartments up along the canal. There was three creches. There was a Newfoundland Resource Centre. There was an after-school building. And there was green space. And it was a really nice plan. Now, you probably could have added a little bit more to it, but that didn't take on the front of the estate, which is the health centre and other community facilities. But that was to be into the third phase. So that plan that we worked on together, and I mean, there was a deep consultation process carried out on the estate. And, you know, Brendan Kenny says there's been a huge amount of consultation. There was consultation, and it was good consultation. There was, we were given an architect to work with us around the plans, and we also got to meet the four set of architects that were designing the estate. So a huge amount of money was put into that whole process. And then it was agreed, it was an agreed plan, and then it went off to the Department of the Environment. And in September 2003, it was rejected by the minister. And in April of that year,
that's Martin Cullen.
Martin Cullen. Right. In April of that year, in a community, something came out to Dublin City Council around public-private partnerships. And also in August, 2nd of August 2002, there was also obviously a decision in the Department around public-private partnerships. So I'm saying it's a bigger picture.
Yeah.
We're only players in a much bigger picture.
So that's where the current difficulties is stemming from, that the government, the council, got actually agreed from a higher level. That this plan is...
Public-private partnership. But what shook us really terribly was when we were told in September of 2003 that it had been, it was only 83 million. We were in the Celtic Tiger. You know, it was Celtic Tiger times, it was 83 million, that was all that was needed to develop this site. And we were told that it was, you know, rejected. And what really shook us was that Dublin City Council went onto the side of the ministry. And they had worked with us very closely. And instead of staying on our side and us fighting it together, fighting the ministry together, they did a U-turn and they went on the side. And from that onwards, they then closed the door on us. They said that they were getting one set of architects to develop a whole plan, and that it would take in some of the other plan. Now, that didn't happen. What happened was they closed the door on us. They got the architects to draw up a master plan, but there was not anything of the old plan really in the new plan. And the new plan consisted of 850 units, 500 of them to be sold privately, 220 first-time buyers which were going to be sold, which becomes private, and only 80 Dublin City Council
social
housing, and they were going to be duplexes, and the people who were promised houses with gardens weren't getting their houses with gardens.
And those people that were supposed to be the remaining 60,
they would be the remaining,
and
anything then over would be given to people either in or about the area. But there was Dublin City Council. Now, we can't agree on 80 houses on a 14 acre site when everybody else can move in privately. We can't agree to that. We can't agree to that. We have to come to some form of agreement of what, if it's 50% of the land or what. You know, we have to move into them kind of agreements. On the 26th of April, we launched a campaign.
This year,
2004. And that campaign was to go out to the wider area to collect signatures of support to get the plan back on the table. We collected over 3,200 of those signatures, and we gave them into the Dublin to the city manager on the 30th of June, on the same day that they were launching their framework plan. They held a task force to show us the plan with the architects. And we were quite taken aback by the density, you know, that it was gone to 850, and that it was all apartments, and that they were actually building 7 stories when they were taking down 8 stories. So 7 stories, 6 stories and 5 stories. So you kind of had to question here, what, you know, why aren't they listening? Why couldn't they hear? You know, why wasn't there houses? But it's all in the bigger plans for the city that you have to go up. So we've collected those 3,200 signatures, and in July we held a large meeting where over 200 people from the area came out to the meeting, and unanimously it was rejected, the plan there. And then Councillor Catherine Bourne took it to the City Council on the 6th of September, and it was unanimously, and I say unanimously across the council, rejected. And the city manager and the assistant city manager weren't pleased at all with this, and yet it was rejected by the people of St. Michael's Estate, rejected by the wider area, rejected by the councillors. They still can't hear, they're still pursuing that framework plan. They've also said that our campaign has put back this estate 5 years, but we would argue that their practice has actually put back the idea that communities can work with statutory bodies like the City Council, and trust that as you're sitting at the tables with them, that you're actually being heard, or that it's an equal partnership. Now, we also know that it's very hard to be an equal partnership between those who have loads of resources and those who don't have resources. You know, it's a difficult partnership, but it has put back the idea of participatory democracy, or, do you know, like, actually building in people's confidence, building them as leaders, you know, believing that you can actually sit down and make change together for the better life of the city.
You're saying there that the county manager, the city manager, and Martin Cullen effectively took the decision in your hands. Do you think that maybe that was done because there's maybe an absence of political power on the estate, that people, as you say, are at risk of?
Well, I think it was done because there's right-wing thinking that's going on in the world at the moment, you know, that believes that privatisation is the only way forward for all of us. You know, here on the estate, we may not have a lot of political power, but we have stopped a 200 million development being pursued. And we have, if that's not power, it's maybe we don't want to see it as victory, because we didn't set out, you know, really, to be victorious and be celebratory about that. What we want is the best for the people. What we want is that poor people in the city of Dublin aren't displaced, that they get to live in their communities, that their culture is valued, that, you know, there's a recognition that we belong to the city just as well as the rich belong to the city. I think that's a really important value. And I think that the thinking of Mr. McCreevy, of Martin Cullen, I'm not saying Brendan Kenny and John Fitzgerald are totally in that thinking. I do believe that the assistant manager, you know, he has something for people who live in these communities. But if they owe a lot of money and there's a way that they can achieve doing things within areas, they're going to pursue. They will pursue at the cost of the 60 families on this estate. They'll pursue to get this land. This land is so valuable. This is, you know, 15 minutes from the city. You'll have the Lewis running alongside you. You're down at Phoenix Park. You've got the Museum of Modern Art. I mean, this is prime land. And the only reasons they can have it is because the drug scene took over this estate. Because I think it would be a different place. I don't think the flats would be gone if the drug scene hadn't had huge effects on it, you know. It made it weak. And then when they detenanted from 1, 2 and 3, it made us weaker again. You know,
less people here as well,
and the less people. But We have Intercor on our site, and that's important because they, in Intercor, there's been over 1,000 apartments built, and a lot of that has been built on private land which was sold. But Intercor has woken up to the fact that this land belongs to the City Council and it isn't private, and they can't replace it with 7 stories when they're taking down 8 stories. And I think that's on our side. I think that's on our side. You know, that the popular view out there. Okay, the business people will want, naturally, more people to come in. They'll want, you know, more people to be part of an area. But in this area, Centra is closed. There are no shops anymore. You know, it's a difficult space for people to live. And we went door to door. People were saying, like, it's 9 o'clock. We can't get 2 carrots in Chicago now. All the shops are closed. You can't get vegetables now. You can't get anything now. You can't get milk, which at least, I mean, it was a vibrant time when there were small shops along the space. So you kind of have to wonder what they're thinking about in the bigger context of things, like around this area. But I think people are, you know, I think people have become aware, and I think we have, our campaign, the St. Michael's campaign, has done that work, you know, and it was us, you know, the councillor took it to the council, but it was us who delivered the victory, really, you know. And I mean, the fight has to continue, and it will continue.
So what do you see happening now in the next, I mean, did the locals and the councillors, communities rejected that PPP plan that the city manager put forward? So I mean, it seems to be kind of an impasse at the moment. What do you think is going to happen next?
Well, we have to make sure that the people on the estate now are the priority of what's to come. And we wanted to go back into the task force space where we can begin to work out agreements, you know. Now, they're telling us, as I said, they're telling us that it's been put back for 5 years. But to me, that's blackmail, I think. I find that as a blackmail. I don't think that any city manager or any assistant city manager has the right to treat people like that. I really don't. I think, you know, I think it's a total disgrace if they sulk and can't work, that we can't work together, you know.
Do you think there's going to be the same level of trust there after you said that the councillors and the officials kind of slam the door in your face after phase two is finished?
No, I don't think there will be that same kind of trust, but we have to get a mechanism that legally binds all the decisions made, because, you know, we can't spend another 2 years sitting at a table where it all gets thrown out the window. We need a mechanism, you know, that will be legal. Like in Fatima, they had a board, and, you know, the Fatima, it is going to be a public-private partnership, but they have got very good results within what they negotiated for the community. And how that was done was, it did have a board, and it had a very big independent chairperson, like somebody from Guinness's, that had a commitment to the city, and on that particular board Brendan Kenny himself sat. So it wasn't that the Dublin City Council had to go back to Brendan all the time. Brendan actually sat in the space, you know, where power was. So that kind of a mechanism may be the way forward for this community. But I also like to say that, you know, what's happening in St. Michael's Estate and us, you know, managing to get the 200 million development stopped for this moment in time has given a lot of hope to communities like O'Demony Gardens, where the same process is happening, and they're pushing it through and pushing it through. And that's a 16-acre site close to the Phoenix Park. So the people up there, you know, have a hard battle on their hands. The same as Chambers Street, down at the end, near to the Coombe. The Chambers Street, that's been developed as a public-private partnership. And what would normally be only, what used to be 8 to the acre in a development, then in this, the plan is 60 to the acre. But what they plan to put in Chambers Street is 120 to the acre. Is that not great? That is great. And we lose them flats as well. And down in Dominic Street, they're beginning to detenant Dominic Street. And so it's not just about St. Michael's Estate. It's all these communities around the city. And we have to unite and we have to fight back. And that's something that's in the process. There's a group called Tenants Force, which brings the tenants from all over the city. for a lot of those towns, maintenance is the issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's something that we have to fight on, is the maintenance of the flats, because it's a disgrace that they've let the majority of the flats across the city run down. Do you know, people pay rent. It's a way of thinking.
What the new PPP plan that you rejected, I mean, obviously there's a much higher density housing there. I mean, what's the effect of that for families, you think? Are you families that are going from, say, a low density like this being put into a high density apartment complex?
I don't believe, and we don't believe anyway, that it's family friendly. We don't believe that it's community at all. So you lose your community. Because what happens is people go into blocks and they live in them, and it's a different form of living to how you're living in the flats. You know, you show up people. It'll be a different ball game, you know. And there'll be a little park, all right, you know, but for kids to go on bikes, for kids to play ball, for kids to... There's not much of that space at all in this new plan. There will be a road through so that cars can drive up to their apartments and that. There will be a new library with the library we brought up from Inchicore. There will be a health centre, redeveloped health centre. You know, they're benefits, but they could have always come after the 11-acre plan, you know. I suppose they argued that they didn't have the money and this is the way it should be, you know, but they never had the debate. They didn't have the debate with us, you know, and they didn't have the debate with the city either. You know,
so
and I think that...
Is that outside here now? I mean, you know, there's a huge big brownfield site out there at the moment. I presume that's one of the spots where
that's where three of the blocks were put down between June and August.
So is that just going to lie derelict now until...
Well, they're saying we put it back 5 years, but they can't leave it like that.
Mm-hmm.
They can't leave it like that.